Welcome back to Reality TV. I'm Jody, your host and inner voice, as we break down all of this week's best of the worst, worst of the best reality shows that are on TV. This week, I'm going to be talking about 90 Day Fiancé, Before the 90 Days, Love After Lockup, and Married at First Sight. Before I jump into the shallow end of the news, thank you to my newest Patreon subscribers, Audie, Amanda, Deborah, and another Amanda, quite the popular name. Welcome, and I hope you enjoy being one of the baddest apples. If you're interested in Patreon, that's going to get you over 80, actually almost 90 bonus episodes coming at you pretty much weekly, early ad-free episodes. Head over to patreon.com/realityvpod, and depending on how you sign up, you'll be getting some keychains, stickers, and for only $1 a month, 25 cents an episode, you'll get early ad-free episodes as well. Now, let's dive into the shallow end of the news. And I almost feel guilty for throwing this news in the shallow end because for me, it was life-changing. If you remember a few weeks ago, I talked about how I am now the asshole who's walking around finally singing Hamilton tunes because I saw Hamilton. Well, Saturday morning, I woke up and I got the alert on my phone that via the Hamilton app, which is free and available to everyone, no matter where Hamilton is playing in the U.S., I won the lottery tickets. So real quickly, all you have to do is download the Hamilton app. And depending on where Hamilton is playing, I think San Francisco, New York, Tulsa, maybe Providence, wherever it's playing, you have a free daily opportunity to win two tickets. And oh my God, let me tell you, I've been doing this for at least a year, finally won two tickets, and the seats are amazing, you guys. It's pretty much whatever seats don't sell is what the winners of the lottery get. My daughter and I looked out, we got second row seats, and pretty much everyone in our row and the row behind us were all lottery winners. So it's not as if there's just one winner each show. It was extraordinary. There's really no other word for it. Like I said, I'm the asshole that's going to keep talking about this, but I'm telling you, it was not only life-changing, but it was libido-changing. And for a late 30-something woman, it was everything I needed to want babies again, to be honest. I nearly came to fists with this Sherry Shepherd lookalike behind me. At intermission, she was telling all of us around because, okay, we are all like middle-aged women drooling over all of these gorgeous, talented, amazing men on stage. And she said Aaron Burr could get it. And I took that as a personal violation because Aaron Burr is mine, sir. I also enjoy Thomas Jefferson, some of those dancers in the ensemble. I knew that they were really busting their ass dancing when I was second to the last row in the uppermost balcony. I mean, really think about that. Second row from the back to now second row from the front. But they really just go hardcore. I can only liken it to when I would do, not Dance Dance Revolution, We Dance, whatever that thing is. Whatever the thing that my kids had me doing where I sweat my ass off after one song, they're doing that the entire show. They are sweating. I mean, spit was flying. It was landing on me, and I loved it. You know me. Normally, that would send me running and screaming, but listen, if Aaron Burr wants to sweat on me, I will bathe in it. All right, I'll stop talking about it, but I'm just putting that out there. Aaron Burr is mine. Now, on the complete opposite end, now we're really going into the shallow end, and this really pissed me off when I opened up my UK Daily Mail app this morning, and right in front of me, I'm going to pull this up because I cannot get this incorrect. Parents of YouTube's highest earner, Ryan Kaji, 7 years old, who has made $22 million testing toys, faced an investigation by the Federal Trade Commission for failing to declare paid sponsorships. Finally, I don't care what it takes, prison, a fine, ding that $22 million off of their bank account. These unboxing videos, these videos where kids are doing jack shit, opening up a fucking Kinder Egg, it's gotta stop. I don't understand why my kids enjoy it. They don't watch this kid, thank God, because I'm just going to be honest. He's not that cute. All right. Ryan is not that cute. And that's my issue with all of these nothing videos. They're nothing. They're doing what everyone does every single day, except they have asshole parents that are jumping in there that want to be famous too. And this kid's parents, I didn't even watch the videos because I can't bring myself to give him any more views. Just the photos in this article, you can tell his parents are just as thirsty. His mom was a high school chemistry teacher. Now she's quit because she has to manage his amazing YouTube career. I just don't see where his career is going, first of all, because he's not always going to be young and questionably cute. That's up to your interpretation. To me, he's not that cute. I am just so over these videos. I'm over the videos of people opening up Peppa Pigs and eggs or trying to do pranks that are really not funny. I'm also tired of the videos of grown adults playing video games where kids are watching adults play video games. How many times I've had to really bust down the door of my kids' bedrooms when they try to close it, and I tell them how creepy it is that they're listening to grown men playing games. Do you see Dad and I sitting there diddling around on our Candy Crush, videotaping ourselves and putting it out there? No, it's creepy. This whole genre of doing nothing on YouTube has got to stop. And I'll be the first one. I'll be a pioneer. I'm going to say no to all that YouTube garbage in this house, because if that is where our generation of children is going, zero creativity, just taping yourselves doing nothing, no real comedic value, this is going to be a very, very sad state of affairs for future SNL stars and episodes. I just can't stand this kid. And again, he ain't that cute. Now, the other bit of news, I'm going to jump over to blind gossip here. You know, they are my go-to for blind items. This one I freaking loved, kind of in the same vein of, is there really a talent there? This is called Waxy is the New Black. You may not have noticed that this fashion world icon has disappeared for weeks at a time over the past year or so. Rehab? No. Vacation? No. What then? Plastic surgery. Quote, she had her face done but did not like the result at all, so she had to have it corrected. It's still awfully waxy, but at least it's better than it was last year. Perhaps covering her face with her signature hairstyle and big sunglasses would make it less noticeable. And there's a photo of Donatella Versace alongside this article, but it says it's not her. So who is this fashion icon? Take a guess. Count it down in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Everyone is saying Anna Wintour. Now, this is the blind gossip stuff I like, because for someone who has a reputation of being very harsh and critical of women and how they look, she's probably gotten away with having the same hairstyle and the same sunglasses because of her name, and that's it. If she were anyone else, she would probably be dissing herself. Does that make any kind of sense? So I just feel like this may be karma's way of coming back at her. Now, I want to address a little something that got me into hot water, and it was a post that I made on my Instagram and Twitter, primarily on Instagram. A couple people disagreed with me, and hey, that's fine. You don't always have to like what I have to say, and sometimes I don't even like what I have to say. But I made a side-by-side of Lacey from Love After Lockup, and I believe her name is Janice from The Muppets. Now, I'm not trying to diss her saying she's ugly, because I don't really think she's ugly. I think she's a pretty person. Actually, my friend Sharita sent me a text message saying that she thinks I look like Lacey. So my point in putting those side by side is that she is a pretty woman, but when you start injecting all this kind of shit in your face, you start looking cartoonish. I didn't say she looked ugly. Janice the Muppet is actually kind of cute, and she's cheerful, and she's got smiling eyes just like Lacey. But stop doing that when you're so young and you don't need to do it. I don't think she's ugly. I'm not trying to bash her on her looks, but there is a resemblance, period. This is an equal opportunity snark place to go. Just like I diss on Darcy's Tom because of his jacked up teeth and his stupid turtleneck and statement glasses. Everyone gets free snark, and I'm the first person to be making fun of how I look. I mean, my nose probably looks like Snuffleupagus, all right? I can take it. All right. Now with that, let's just jump into some Married at First Sight, because it was kind of a boring week, but we're leading up to the finale. Depending on when you listen to this, the finale might have already aired. We'll just have to wait and see until next week when I talk about it then. But if you are a Patreon subscriber, you're listening to this on Monday. So let's jump into She Loves Me, She Loves Me Not, the latest episode. All of the couples are wrapping up that group getaway where they're at the cabin in the woods. They're all afraid of the bears. Ooh. And they're all claiming it's been so wonderful. They've bonded with their own spouses. They've bonded as a group. Blah, blah, blah. I really feel badly for Keith. And side note, Keith looks a lot like the guy who plays Thomas Jefferson in Hamilton. I told you, I'm going to be an asshole bringing it up all the time. However, he deserves a lot better than Iris. I think Iris is a nice person. She's just not ready for a serious relationship because she acts like she's 13 years old. The fact that Keith is talking about his sex life with his mom, or lack thereof with his mom, I think that's telling. He's that concerned about it. And I agree with him. Iris, being 27, should be a little bit further along with her comfort level in even talking about sex. And I realize I'm a huge freaking hypocrite because I'm 39. I've had two children. I've been married for, over 14 years, and I still get uncomfortable talking about it. But if you make your whole life about your virginity and your purity and all that kind of stuff, and you're not willing to change anything about it, but you're expecting Keith to change his needs and desires in this relationship, there's a little bit of a selfishness, if that makes any kind of sense. I don't know. I just feel badly for Keith. There's a better match for him out there, but I'm going to feel really badly for Iris if and when he decides to leave the marriage. Now that I think about it, okay, here's my prediction for Iris and Keith. I think Keith wants to stay in the relationship. Iris wants to stay in the relationship, but they're going to break up soon thereafter because Keith doesn't want to be the bad guy on TV. Now, Elizabeth and Jamie. First of all, I have to take issue with Elizabeth's mom telling her the first year is the hardest. I could not disagree with that more. For any of you who, not even just being married, in any relationship, I think the first year, if it is that difficult, it's only going to get harder. The first year, you're still in that honeymoon phase. You still have all those hormones and brain chemicals, they're just firing left and right. And you think it's just so cute that your partner is, I don't know, drooling or leaves their laundry hanging out halfway. Oh my gosh, that silly little quirk. No, I think year 6 through 8 is the most difficult. All those little quirks that were once so cute and charming that you could put up with, they make you homicidal now. Year 6 through 8, if you decide to have children, you're either going through fertility stuff, you've had kids, you have newborns, maybe a newborn and some toddlers. It's just so fucking difficult once you reach that stage. So to tell your kid the first year is the hardest, and if you can get through that, you can get through anything, don't put that out there, because they might be thinking, like Elizabeth and Jamie probably do, because, you know, well, they're Elizabeth and Jamie. They're thinking, oh, okay, well, we got through that. It's not going to get harder. Oh, it is. Buckle the fuck up. Now, Jamie ends up meeting with Beth's friend, Mario. Kind of makes me wonder why he wasn't meeting with his own friends. Maybe because he doesn't have any, because I think Jamie is a huge frickin' prick. I can't stand him, but I'm going to go into that a little bit later. First, let's talk about this lovely lunch that Mario planned. I'm giving Mario all the credit because I do not see Jamie ordering that lovely charcuterie. He does not have good taste in anything. So, Mario, way to go. Let's get together for some charcuterie and wine together sometime. He gives really good advice. When Jamie went on to brag that Beth said her vagina was made for Jamie's penis or vice versa, ooh, I know, group gag reflex here. Mario really doesn't flinch about it. He's like, yeah, well, for her, the foreplay comes before sex. For you, it's kind of vice versa. Depends on what you feel brings you together. Conversation brings her together. It makes her feel sexual. For him, it's just the opposite. He's absolutely right, but Jamie is too wrapped up in himself to really take in the advice, because later they go on their date night together. Apparently, Beth forgot to put her shirt on because her boobs were, bam, right there. And I don't mind boobage. I have large boobs myself, which I hate. But she had, like, near areola slippage. So while she forgot to cover up her naughty bits, Jamie forgot to keep his goddamn ego in check. I think we all agree Beth is a little wacko, but Jamie is a dick. He instigates fights every single time we see him, and he disses Beth at the most unexpected moments. They're getting along perfectly fine, and then he throws something out there, and then he shrugs like, what? Everyone would say the same thing. No, they wouldn't. You're being a total asshole. It's classic gaslighting, like I said last week. Jamie also has, in my opinion, a very unrealistic expectation of sex. He wants sex every day, no matter what, no matter whether they're fighting or they're not. Beth doesn't feel that way. If you want to have sex every day and your partner does too, good for you guys. I know that's not my thing, but if you're both on the same page, great. Then it is not an unrealistic expectation. But it is when, let's say, Beth flirts with him or just kisses him. Jamie thinks it's all or nothing. No kissing or hugging or teasing unless it's going to lead to sex. And if Beth doesn't want to have sex that night, whether it's because, like she had mentioned, she has a UTI or maybe her period, or maybe she's just tired and doesn't want to do it, he says she's frigid and she's not a sexual being. And that really is kind of a insult. I don't think anyone wants to be told you are not a sexual being, because you're basically telling them you don't exude any sort of sex appeal. I don't find you attractive. That's how I would take it. I think any person would take that personally. I think he just needs to chill the fuck out. And who the hell is he to expect any woman, not even just Beth, any woman that he's with should not be expected to have sex with him just because he wants it. No one should feel guilted into having sex with their partner because they don't want their partner to be upset with them or mad or yelling or calling them a materialistic cunt like he did before. Beth is crazy, but I think she can do better, or at least she doesn't deserve to be treated the way that Jamie treats her. To me, and I know this may be really far-reaching here, I'm putting on my non-certified psychologist hat. I think Jamie's got a much larger and deeper belief system about women in general, and it's coming out in this way. Now, I'm going to share a little bit about my belief system, in that Jamie needs to burn that blue shirt. If he's not going to, I am. He is wearing that thing thin. He wore it all day. Then later, when they went on that date, he wore it under his sport coat. But his sport coat had a little pocket square in it. Like, if you're going to go wear a pocket square, wouldn't you then dress up the thing underneath it? And not only did he wear it all day, then to dinner, then he wore it to bed and was lounging around in it all the next day. That's disgusting. The shirt probably smells like dinner plus BO plus his asshole ego essence. You know, maybe that's the reason Beth doesn't want to have sex with him, because he fucking smells. Now I'm going to save Amber and Matt for last, because of course we have to. Let's talk about the lovely Deanna and Greg. I love this couple, and I love Pico de Gallo. I'm going to call him Pico de Grego. This is Greg's friend. He is back, and I think he is making some serious steps towards replacing Pastor Cal. Please, lifetime gods, make this happen. Now, Deanna is out to dinner with her friends, and I loved this scene. The only thing I hated about it was that I was not there with those three ladies, because that dinner, drinks, and apps looked amazing. They are my kind of girlfriends. They're laughing. They're teasing each other. Loved it. I hated the little mini clothespins that were used to pin the lemon wedges to the sides of the glass. Can we stop with that? And could we also stop with the smoking orange essences and infusing it into drinks? It might taste good, but a second drink is going to taste much better than one that I have to wait 20 minutes for because you're essencing something together, infusing something. Just give me a damn vodka tonic or a lemon something or other minus the clothespin. What am I going to do with it? Just think of the environment, you guys. What are we going to do with little wooden clothespins? Maybe baby clothes, because Deanna and Greg really would have adorable babies. Later, they have a charcuterie too, so you know that they are a couple built to last. My prediction for Deanna and Greg, they stay together. Maybe they don't end up staying married for like years and years and years. I want that to happen, but it's at least going to be a long-term relationship. Did I make a prediction about Elizabeth and Jamie? I don't think I did. I think they stay together. I don't think that they're going to stay together long term, though. Maybe like another year, 6 months. But now Amber and Matt. Wow. Well, Matt meets with his friend Devin and finally says what he's been thinking this entire season, what we all know, and that is Amber is clingy. No shit, Sherlock, with your dumb big old teeth and your tall socks and your deer in the headlights smile. I freaking hate everything about Matt. He kind of reminds me, I don't know why, but he kind of reminds me of Garrett from Love After Lockup. He's got that, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he wants to have that swagger bullshit. I can't stand anything about him. But the thing that bugged me about that conversation, besides Matt's face and stupid socks, is that it was all about Amber. Amber being clingy. You know, he doesn't know if he's ready because she really wants to be in this. What about you, Matt? What are you doing to fuck things up? Maybe it's not about her being clingy, which she is, but maybe it's about you just not giving a shit about anything and pretending that you're doing this because you want to be with someone. What was his intention in doing this? I don't think it's because he didn't want to be lonely, like he said to Amber. Is it to have like a hosting career, a sports center, third string basketball commentator bullshit? He's just such a bad liar. And that's what made that lame brewery date night really icky feeling to me. It wasn't awkward. It wasn't sad. It was just icky because you can tell that Matt is saying what he thinks he's supposed to say in the moment. It's so insincere. And for Amber sitting there being that woman who is just pulled along, strung along, we all know it, and watching poor Amber's heart just being fooled and teased with and broken, it's horrible. I feel so badly for her. That best friend, Raven, with the papas on chairs. First of all, I want to just, I don't know, throw him like $20 to go get a futon or something from IKEA. I don't even care what, but those things have got to go out in the trash. They might have been what my sister threw away in, what was that, 1997, after she redid her room, because her room was all peach. Remember when peach was like the big color of the late 80s, early 90s? Everything was peach. Yeah, she had this big peach papasan chair, and we thought it was the fucking coolest thing. Until you realize, oh, they're uncomfortable. They take up way too much room. It's just an even uglier lazy boy chair, basically. Anyhow, he's got two of them, and he can't comfort Amber because he's sitting in another papasan chair. He can't just pop out of that wicker thing or else he's going to make the whole disc flip over. But he tells her the truth. He's a good friend. The only thing I'm wondering is, why are they not together? I don't think Raven is gay. I don't think he's in a relationship because, I mean, come on. If he was in a relationship with a woman, there wouldn't be two papasan chairs in that apartment. So why aren't they together? They're like the same height. They kind of look alike, to be honest. They could be, maybe he's like a third triplet. Maybe the mom that took off. Okay, hold on. Let me flesh out this theory here. The mom had triplets. Amber, the twin, and the brother triplet. Obviously, Amber and her twin sister were like one egg that split, but there was another egg that stayed inside of her, grew into like a super embryo fetus, and she gave birth to Raven later with her lesbian lover. They're long lost brothers and sisters. That's why they can't be together. It's science. It's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. You can't argue with that. Now, do they stay together, Matt and Amber? Of course not, because he's cheating on her, and we all know it. If you have missed all the spoilers that are out on Twitter and Instagram and Starcasm, sorry, they're not together anymore. I don't think that's a big surprise to anyone. Now, after a quick break and a word from my sponsor, I'll be back with Love After Lockup and 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days. We all love our reality TV, and I know that's all I'm watching at night when I finally get a chance to relax. But I can't be a total Paul or Angela and not know what is going on in the world. The Newsworthy is the perfect daily podcast that keeps you up to date with everything you need to know in 10 minutes or less. Host Erica Mandy is a veteran journalist who gets to the point without taking sides and keeps it fun, fair, and fast. She's not going with alarmist headlines or boring Dow Jones indexes. Is that even a thing? See, she just delivers what we need and what we want to know. From weather to politics to entertainment news, The Newsworthy has it all in one place. Join me and thousands of people listening each weekday by searching The Newsworthy wherever you listen to podcasts or go to thenewsworthy.com to check it out. Well, 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 I have to tell you guys, Love After Lockup listeners, you are all the smartest friends I have, the best listeners, the best boots on the ground ever. You know what? Before I go into this, please tell me when I am allowed to use your name because I really want to give credit where credit is due. You guys give me some really good ideas, some good tips, some great memes and photos. And if I can use your name, just let me know. But I'll leave this genius anonymous for now. Anonymous, we'll just call you, sent me her theory on Andrea. Now, like I said, I talked about her joke of a sunglass company and how there's no way in hell this is a real company that's making money and how LaMondre was matching her earnings. Well, Anonymous said it's quite possible, and I think it is absolutely, allegedly truthful, that LaMondre is maybe, allegedly, using Andrea to launder his drug dealing earnings. Think about it. He's very open about still earning loads of cash behind bars, and he's given her money left and right. So maybe the people who are buying Andrea's glasses are also LaMondre's customers? Maybe. I don't know. Anonymous thinks that this is very likely, and I do too. But again, this is all just allegedly. We're just theorizing, throwing some options out there. Or maybe Andrea is still earning residuals for her commercials. As the lady whose eyeballs pop out of their sockets. Does anyone else remember this commercial? I don't know if it was a lady on a Snapple commercial or Arby's, Burger King, Wendy's. You know what I'm talking about, right? Where her eyeballs actually jump out of their sockets and go back in. I think that's Andrea. I think she's lost some weight. She's cut her hair and she's back on TV as Love After Lockup. Am I just cracking myself up here? Anyhow, all right, let's get to Lizzie and Daniel. Ooh, well, I thought Lizzie was kind of a brat last week, the way that she was treating Daniel's mom, but I think Daniel is kind of a little jerk. He could not have given less shits and been any more annoyed with Lizzie right off the bat. I mean, she did pull a Lizzie from seasons 1 and 2 when she jumped on Scott and knocked his dentures out, but still, your girlfriend is excited to hug you after, what was it, 3 or 5 years, and you're just afraid that she's going to mess up your fade and your little laser lights shaved into your head. You're fine, Daniel. Just hug the girl and shut up. And just in case you're wondering what it's like driving with my 76-year-old mom, well, watch Daniel hanging from that oh shit handle in the back seat. My grandma was the exact same way, and now my mom is. They fear the highways, and apparently it's hereditary, so just wait till I hit menopause, and I will be confined to a 10-mile radius. I need to travel the world while I can before I turn into a Daniel or my mom, although I don't know if I would really mind that so much because my mom doesn't wear a bra. She travels the world. She wears Canadian versions of Crocs called dogs. Might just be pretty damn good. So for that, I guess you're welcome, world. Now, Lacey. Oh, Lacey, Shane, and John. To be honest, I don't know if the new boyfriend, if that's Shane or if that's John. It doesn't matter. For some reason, it didn't click with me until now. Shane, John, let's just call him Bangs because he's got those little boy bangs, which I freaking hate. Bangs is 21. Lacey's 29 and has 3 kids. This is feeling very Mary Kay Letourneau to me. And I know that it shouldn't because he's of age, but for some reason it does. I get that intellectually they're on the same level. And the same goes for whoever owns this diner, because while they were chit-chatting over an egg, whatever bacon, and a single waffle, I was looking at the menu on the chalkboard in the background. Anyone else? It said menu 11 to 4 p.m. Interesting. Sunday buffet coming soon. New menu. What? This is just like a whole bunch of restaurant words thrown up on a chalkboard. And if you just have new menu coming soon or Sunday buffet, no. Especially if I just got out of prison. You better be giving me a menu with a variety of skillets on it and give it to me now before I eat a small child that just so happens to be walking by. Coming soon. Get the fuck out of here. I need it coming now. That sounded dirty, and that's probably exactly what happened when Bangs went back to the hotel room. Let's talk about that. Well, they get there, and Lacey requests adjoining rooms. I give her credit. She's smart. I know what she's doing. She doesn't want to worry about pooping with John or Shane or Bangs, whatever the hell his name is, around. So she's getting her own room. I approve. I would have done the same thing. So there. Sorry about the Muppet comparison, but I'm just observing what I see, what's put in front of me. Angela and Tony. Holy shit, I did not see this plot twist coming. Now, if you remember, Angela has a vagina and a mouth that Tony doesn't want anything to do with. And now she's got this picnic table that even Tommy, who we find out very soon, clearly would turn down any kind of steak in a heartbeat for what Angela's got going on. He won't sit at her picnic table. What's going on here, and why is he insisting on putting such stress on his knees? And why does Tommy, who looks like he's got a stable job, maybe his car is even paid off, he has a washing machine, we know that, he irons his clothes, why is he wanting to marry Angela? They don't look like they have anything in common, yet they are very good friends. Tommy's got a little Michael Scott to him, although I hate to just blanket my Michael Scott comparisons out there, but there just happened to be a lot of them lately between 90 Day Fiancé and now Love After Lockup. Did Angela put Tommy up to this to make herself seem more desirable? She has two men in love with her. I think Tommy would be more compatible with Jenny from Jenny and Sumit from 90 Day Fiancé. Wouldn't they be the sweetest little couple? He would probably love her daughters and her grandkids. Let's put those two together. I don't trust Angela with Tommy's heart. And Tony, well, clearly he doesn't want to have anything to do with Angela. Now, Vincent and Amber, I didn't even take any notes on these two because Amber said it herself. Everyone else I've dated is the complete opposite of Vincent, meaning he's a male and she's into females, right? And I'm not saying that as a diss. I'm not trying to make a joke out of it. Amber says she has a prison wife, or maybe she's bisexual, or wherever she falls on the Kinsey scale, whatever it is, she's not into Vincent. It's just that simple. I don't know how he doesn't see it. What kind of women has he been with that treated him so shitty that he thinks Amber is a prize? Come the fuck on, man. You're not a victim of being led on or having your heart broken when the girl is actually locking the door telling you, you're the complete opposite, go away, I don't want to even go work out with you. See the signs when they're there. Now, Cheryl and Josh, oh, what a loving couple, right? Sex on a mountainside on an Airbnb blanket. No wonder Josh's mom doesn't like this monster. I mean, shouldn't Cheryl have scoped out the parole situation and the mom situation before she decides to go and move into a motel for a few months without her kids? This chick is just bricks for brains. And I know we really should feel badly for her because, I mean, there's no future with this guy. But I don't feel badly for her because she has kids that she chose to just leave alone with her parents while she goes and literally dicks around on the side of a mountain. The irony is not lost on me that Josh is choosing his mom just like she chose Josh. So now she's feeling exactly how her kids feel. Well, I think we need to lighten things up. Let's take a left turn and head to Nigeria. I told you I'm not very good at geography. Left, right, over some kind of an ocean. Let's get to Nigeria and 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days. Angela and Michael. They never disappoint. They are one of the all-time greatest couples on this show. Not together, but just what they give us. together, I guess, and individually. What in the holy hell happened that we did not see leading up to this crazy fight on the middle of the road? Was Michael parked like in the airport? This was insane. Michael gets these spikes thrown in front of his tires, and most people's first reaction would be, stay in the car. This is a foreign country. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to let Michael take care of it. But no, 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 no. Angela moves faster than Gal Gadot and Wonder Woman, springs out of that car like fucking Flo-Jo, throws her cigarettes across the top of the car so you know she was serious. She starts swinging, pushing, yelling. She was the loudest one in the whole bunch. I would have been terrified that I was going to be locked up abroad. Angela almost got into like a broke down palace situation. Can you even imagine her in a Nigerian prison? It scares me what hypes Angela up. She loved that freaking fight. She wasn't even shy about it. And as much as she loves Trump, I don't think he's going to risk an international situation to rescue her from that place. And oh, her baby's balls dropped. That's a turn on, Michael. Too soon, Ange. Too soon with Scotty's past. Don't even go there. Now, I bet you think I'm going to comment on Angela's sex caboodle that she brought abroad, but no, I'm going to thank her. Thank her and Michael and 45 for turning off all reproductive abilities and desires, really putting my ovaries, my uterus into a permanent recession, if you will. And I don't think it really matters your politics. I know we all get along here, even though, you know, some of us are on either side of the aisle. Seeing Michael modeling those skivvies for all of us was chilling, really brought us all together as a nation. And now let's talk about this chocolate jar that came out of said caboodle. Why, Angela? Why? Why would you not just eat a goddamn piece of chocolate? Why leave a disaster for housekeeping to clean up? You know that room's going to have to be retired, like my now useless vagina. It's going to be like a haunted hotel room. There are things that have gone down in there that no one should have to absorb the energy of or find whatever has fallen off or been shedded off, licked off. A lot went on in there, and I don't want to know, and I don't think the camera crew want to know because they haven't gone back in that room either. Now, the morning after the happenings seemed quite blissful. They're all getting along until the beginning of the end, and that's when the concierge delivered fried chicken to Michael's tin can. That is some kind of service. Now, I don't eat KFC because, you know, I like my asshole remaining intact, but that Nigerian service industry, it is giving all American drive-thrus a run for their money. I'm just surprised Angela wasn't also diving into that chicken. Michael is just slurping that shit up, oh, greasy fingers and all. And I don't know if that's what set Angela off, really, seeing him enjoy the meal that she's paying for. But why did Angela wait until she and Michael arrived at the boat dock to nail him down on this lie? She could have gone into it for that entire hour ride there. Maybe she knew, she calculated it out that she was going to run up the car and this was going to be part of the scene with the crew. I don't get it. But she asks him if he had ever been on a boat. And he said, yeah, when I was younger. But then Angela did her research and probably did a little Google like a good reality TV listener does. And she knows that he lied. So she is done. Now, I don't know whether it was because there happened to be a woman who didn't even look like she was with Michael on the boat or the fact that Michael said he had never been on a boat. Not quite sure, but she is done. And she wants Michael, get your shit and get out of my hotel room, Michael. Bye. Bye, Michael. Damn son of a bitch. All right, Angela, so should we just get your visa for the next 3 months before you head back there and you're back on? Because, listen, I think Angela doesn't want many shifts at the veterinary clinic that she's working at, and she will absolutely be on the next season of 90 Day Fiancé. Now let's head east to Kenya with Benjamin and Akini. I still love Akini. I still think she is the most gorgeous woman that has ever been on this show. I think she's just stunningly beautiful, but she's so sad. And it makes me sad because her desperation, You can feel it. But I don't think she's using Benjamin. I do think that there is a level of deep, well, I think Benjamin loves Akini, but I think Akini does care for Benjamin. There's a deep feeling for him. So that scene with Mother Akini, I don't know if TLC is like trying to aid in my husband getting me medications for hormone replacement or something, because they're doing a pretty damn good job. I was bawling. I had to take a moment. I had to pause the TV because I felt so badly for not only Akini in that scene with his mom and her, or with her mom and her brother. I felt badly for Benjamin. He's doing everything right. Unlike most of the men on this show, he's doing everything by the book. He's not complaining about staying with Fidel. He's not being rude. He's not being an asshole American in a foreign country. He is being attentive to Akini. I just want this to work out so badly. And the fact that she thinks everything has gone wrong, I'm really deeply concerned. And I don't know if Benjamin's going to be able to bounce back from this like most guys would. If this doesn't work out, I'm going to need to fly out to Phoenix and give this guy a hug. All right, we got to get some more snark going here. So let's talk about Darcy and Tom. Tom's such a friggin' wuss. I mean, if he really injured his ankle by having standard missionary sex, well, you know, Darcy was probably crying and reciting her mission statement for, what's her company? House of 11. Well, then he deserves to have every part of his body twisted off. I can't stand him. And you know for a fact that Darcy does cry when she has sex. She gets all spiritual gangster on his ass. And he's such a puss, and I hate that word. He's just a delusional dork. Honestly, he probably twisted his ankle while he was posing in the mirror trying to get the right angle, or, I don't know, shaving his legs in the shower. He's the worst. Now let's talk about, oh God, their night out and Roussel. This is another one that went crazy on my Instagram. Go and look. I posted a picture of Roussel and I mentioned about her name, reminding me of the Seinfeld episode, Rochelle Rochelle, a young girl's strange erotic journey from Milan to Minsk. Well, Rochelle and Darcy started talking to each other because people started commenting on her looks, and they went into who are all these haters and hating on the way women look, but we're here for each other, sister. You've become family to me. Aspen and Ariona, or whatever the hell her other daughter's name is. Aniko, I think that's it. Anyhow, they're loving on each other, talking to each other back and forth. Go and look at it. It was cracking me up. Both of these women are so thirsty for attention. I mean, how can you go on TV with that amount of makeup and that crazy of a look? You clearly want to be seen. You're wearing a huge, fluffy coat. Your hair is dyed halfway down. I don't know if it was like white or purple. People are going to look at you when you walk out of the door with an outrageous look. And she's definitely batshit crazy. Like I mentioned in one of my tweets, I think Rochelle is like that psycho stalker girl that's on the Bachelor finale, and we come to find out she has an active warrant for her arrest. Now let's talk about Rebecca and Syed. I'm going to say it once again. What are you doing, Rebecca? I don't even think Syed's parents like him all that much. They don't even approve of Rebecca because of her tattoos, but they were giving her a long hug and kiss, more so than Syed. I don't blame him. Syed is weird. His mom seemed kind of aloof to him, very Erica Jane. Hey, you want to go move in with the tattooed lady, Syed? Bye. Now, hand me those clothesline clips. Maybe she needs some. She's going to send them to North Carolina for Married at First Sight for that bar. You know, she doesn't want Syed anywhere around her clean clothes with his greasy hair. So get the fuck out of here. She really didn't seem to care that much. Please don't bring him to the U.S. Rebecca, if you're listening, please leave him there. I can't bribe you with money because I really don't have any, but I'll offer my services. I'm very good at Google. I'm very good at deep diving. I can help you out with your PI career. Okay, Caesar and Maria. Ugh, what do we think about Caesar? Wow. On one hand, of course, I feel badly for the guy, but on the other, he's got candy thongs all over the place. If you're meeting the love of your life, who's going to be fresh off a 17-hour flight, and you're greeting her with a thong made of Necco wafers, That's deserving of a rejection right there. Ask any woman, the last thing we want between our lady parts after a long, claustrophobic transatlantic flight is anything edible and or riding up our ass between anything, okay? All a woman wants is a shower, a baggy t-shirt, no bra, a vintage Real Housewives of New York marathon on TV, and no goddamn interruptions. That's all we're looking for. You want a perfect proposal idea, guys? There you go. You're welcome. Leave her alone and she will love you forever. She'll say yes to the goddamn dress. I'm getting lost in a fantasy world here. Just a hotel room, your fiance nowhere around, and no bra and a big t-shirt. Wow. Okay. Where were we? Caesar. Right. Okay. The melted chocolate. I don't know what the fuck that was. Smarties aside, the chocolate aside, Caesar is going to get down to the bottom of why Maria's flight and a reservation has suddenly been canceled. Now, for weeks, we were falsely led to believe that was because she canceled it. But no, Caesar's card was declined, so there really was no flight at all for her to take anyway. So now the mystery continues. What are they going to talk about on the phone next week when he calls her? And there's also a mystery that I need to get to the bottom of. Why does Caesar have a light pink phone case and no common sense? All right, Avery and Omar, oh, goddammit, TLC, they're doing it to me again. They're making me take sides, but I'm taking both of them. I like Omar and I like Mother Avery equally. I like and respect both their opinions, but I'm also skeptical of both of them equally, totally torn right down the middle both ways. You know, maybe they're better matches for each other than Avery and Omar. Avery seems to be the only one here that isn't thinking things through fully. So, I don't know, maybe there's a little age gap love here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, no, me neither. All I know is that I 100% get where Mother Avery is coming from because, well, as a mom, she's looking after her daughter. She doesn't want her daughter just picking up and moving to a war zone. So I don't think it's anything about her mom being judgmental. I think she's just being a mom. All right, Timothy and Jennifer. Yeah, anyone notice that? Her name is actually spelled J-E-N-I-F-F-E-R. Isn't it normally two N's, one F, or am I incorrect? To me, it looks like Jennifer, like a Swiffer, only she's a whole lot bitchier, and she certainly doesn't work as hard. Now, Tim, tiny little Tim, he wakes up in that hotel bed like I wish I woke up every morning, just fresh-faced, you know, from that gold-infused face mask. He's got a nice loose cotton jogger, tank top, no bra, and already a few statement necklaces strung around his neck, ever so casually, you know, like every guy wakes up. Right. Now, I know there have been a lot of comments. A lot of you have sent things to me saying, oh, I think he's gay. I don't think Tim is gay. I don't think he's gay because he didn't sleep with Jennifer Swiffer and he does face masks. I just think he's a douche because he does face masks proudly for all to see. And I just think he's a normal guy for not having sex with a woman while a camera crew is all eyes and all film on you. And I also think Jennifer is kind of a bitch for dissing Tim's breakfast efforts. What the fuck was that? I can't remember the last time someone made me breakfast. She's pretending like she's Kate Middleton of Columbia. I see you, Niff. I know your freaking type. Now, we also know Tim's type, you know, the type who doesn't respect their elders, Angela. You know, man, I think Jennifer's grandparents were questioning Tiny Tim because they don't trust him, because he didn't even bother to look up. He was just shoveling his rice in his mouth, and he couldn't have cared less to make a good first impression. He was so freaking rude to them. Yeah, Jennifer is translating, but you can put your arose on the side for now and concentrate on a very serious conversation at hand, even if he fully didn't understand it. He was way too aloof for my liking. He should know better than that. It's not as if he doesn't know the culture, because we find out that he has been to Colombia 5 times. He drops this bomb in the middle of this conversation. Crazy. They're so close. They're so close to marriage, in fact, that they haven't talked about this before. Clearly, Tim has a type. So Jennifer goes to dinner with him. She throws a beer on him after she finds out that his ex texted him and he has his ex in his phone under mommy. Ooh, I know it's a normal thing for guys to call their girlfriends and wives mommy, but somehow Tim saying mommy gives me the willies. I don't think I've actually ever said the willies. Tim gives me the willies, and the willies is worse than creeps. So my question to you after that rambling is, do you think that was staged? Think about it. They both had wet hair, and Jennifer certainly doesn't seem like the type who's just going to walk around with wet hair. She does herself up all the time. The only time her hair is wet is when she's working out, right? And Tim, same thing. His hair is all wet. I think there's some gel in there too, but I think that they might have filmed this more than once. It would not surprise me because Tim and Jennifer would love to be on a telenovela. They're both so attention hungry and thirsty. And you know what? I'm thirsty too. I'm thirsty for you to sign up for Patreon and listen to Total Request Podcast. Amanda and I are going to be talking about John and Kate Plus 8, the episode where they go to Disney World. Don't miss that. That's at patreon.com/AmandaandJody. Coming up this week, I'll have a Patreon episode. I think we're going to do some more blind items and celebrity gossip. That's at patreon.com/realityvpod. Check out a new episode of Moms on the Rocks. Thank you for your 5-star reviews. Thank you for sharing and spreading the word. Hope you have a great week. I'll talk to you soon. And until next time, stay salty.